thanks so much to the organizers. I would have loved to meet the people at this conference and had lots of discussions and maths and physics late into the night. But for now, I'm really grateful that you've organized this, and I'm really looking to more interactions with people. So the title of my talk is Mathematical Puzzles from Causal Set, Quantum Gravity. And by puzzle, I don't mean something that is insoluble, I hope. I mean just questions that have popped up, which I, for one, am not capable of answering without the help of mathematicians. And since we are in the presence of some excellent mathematicians here in the audience, I thought it's an opportunity to kind of share this with not only the mathematicians, but other physicists who might give us perspectives and might help us inch towards answers. And at the bottom are a bunch of my collaborators who I'm all very grateful to. Okay, let me see if I can go to the next page. I'm not able to. Not sure how.
You can try to press space. Sometimes it works. Okay.
All right. Yeah, that worked. I think I had to press play. All right. So before I start, of course, I need my mandatory slide. Of course, the set theory, which may not be familiar to many of you. So I will spend the next couple of slides on that. And this is an approach to quantum gravity that was proposed by Bombelli, Lee, Meyer, and Sorkin in 1987. And it is, the statement is that the fine-grained structure of space-time is that of a causal set, which is a locally finite, partially ordered set. And here are examples of them. Where does this idea come from? It's motivated very deeply from Lorentzian geometry. In Lorentzian geometry, unlike any other geometry, unlike Riemannian geometry or any other signature geometry, the causal structure, there is a causal structure poset associated with every causal spacetime. And that causal structure poset, people have pondered how important that could be because it's very unique. It's a very unique feature of Lorentzian geometry. And people over the years, over several decades, have pondered the importance of this poset. And wondering whether it could be axiomatic, it can replace geometry in some way or the other. And it culminated in this very important theorem due to Hawking, King, McCarthy, and Malamut, and others, that if you take just the causal structure poset of a future and past distinguishing space-time, which is also causal, you can recover everything about the conformal geometry. The only missing ingredient that you have is the volume element. And if you add these two things together, then you get the space-time. The volume element, of course, is a scalar. So if you're thinking about the entire geometry, it's in four dimensions, it's 9/10 of the information of the space-time is contained in the causal structure. This is the deepest motivation we have for causal set theory, where we then say, well, yes, let's take that partially ordered set, but now we have to have, there's this missing ingredient of the volume element. What do we need? We say, well, instead of putting in something new, we say that the number, which is a local finiteness of the partially ordered set, gives you the volume element. And in an approximate sense, space-time is emergent. Okay. Oh my, I have a feeling my slides aren't really good. Okay, something has messed up. I'm really sorry about that. I really apologize about this. I think it has something to do with my use of Keynote. So one of the questions that you want to ask is, well, fine, you've thrown away the continuum, but how do you get it back? Because that's an important question. How do you recover the continuum geometry that we so love from this discrete substructure? And therefore, we very much a part of causal set theory is how do we construct how do we get to the continuum again via what we call the continuum approximation? And here we make a correspondence between order and the causal structure and number and volume. If you discretize a continuum space-time in a very regular way, the second feature, which is number and the volume correspondence, does not hold. And so the idea, again, something that I mentioned yesterday, is that the idea of random geometry helps us out. In particular, if you take a Poisson distribution, then on an average, the number is related to the volume. So the number of elements in a given space-time region is related to its volume on average. So important to this random discretization is also that you do get back symmetry. You do get back Lorentz invariance in a very specific sense. My first question that I will pose today is not to do with this with symmetry, but rather the question that maybe is of interest to mathematicians. I, as a physicist, I'm happy that this works. I'm happy that you get out Lorentz invariance, okay, with the Poisson distribution. But one of the interesting questions is how unique and special is Poisson? And there's some work along these lines by Aslan, Beghi, and Saravani, but this is a question that I think could potentially be of interest to mathematicians. Is there a way to make the fluctuations smaller, or is this the best you can get? Okay. So as I said, the continuum is emergent, and you want to ask the question, how do you get out geometry from just the order theoretic structure? And this is the entire program within causal set theory of what I call geometric reconstruction, which is you go and you look at the causal set, just order, and you say, well, you know, this piece here actually corresponds to this very complicated topological or geometric structure. And this is an art that's developed over the years, and there's a lot of work in this area. And we've uncovered a lot of things, but there are more, possibly more geometrically interesting order invariants that we can extract. And this is something that could be of interest to those beginning to do causal sets, or beginning to be interested in discrete geometry. And that's an ongoing question that, there's sort of almost no end to it, but I think that there's a lot of rich structure that's still yet to be obtained. Examples of this, I'll just focus on one because I'm short on time, I'm already halfway through, I think. So I better speed up. So here's an example, which is that if you think of the time-like distance, then the time-like distance can be given in terms of the length of the longest chain is proportional to it, which is the longest ordered relation you can have. So the most number of points you can have between them. Okay, so this takes me to a fairly central question within causal set theory, which is the causal set Hauptvermutung, or the fundamental conjecture, which is essentially that if you have a causal set and it is approximated by two spacetimes, then those two spacetimes must look very similar to each other. They should differ only on scales smaller than the discreteness scales. And this is important because really what we're trying to do is to be able to get all the relevant information out of the causal set. This isn't some symmetry that we're expecting between two very different spacetime like you would in mirror symmetry. And so one of the questions that one has is what does this squiggly line mean? When are two Lorentzian geometries close to each other? When are two causal sets close to each other? When are two causal structures close to each other, right? And so this is a mathematically very interesting question. There's been some work on Lorentzian Gromov-Hausdorff distance, looking for PF invariants so this is my second question. And then of course, one can try to put scalar fields. We can try to put matter on causal sets. And there are many interesting things that have been found this way. Again, I'm missing a diagram, but very important here is the construction of a Dalembertian for a scalar field, following which you get the an action for causal sets. And in this action, you can see that unlike the idea of nearest neighbors is very important. It's quintessentially Lorentzian, because the nearest neighbor in a Riemannian geometry would be spheres, you know, ever-increasing spheres of ever-increasing size. But here we have hyperboloids, and you're counting nearest neighbors. And just that counting of these special sets, which I've shown a picture of, gives you something as, you know, important as an action, as the Dalembertian. So one of the things that comes about in all of this is, and this is my next question, is there a purely order theoretic dimension dependent Green function? If not, can one find it for arbitrary dimension? Okay. There's also the question of quantum scalar fields. And for this, this very important work that was done by Stephen Johnston on constructing, using a very different way of thinking about quantum field theory. These are free Gaussian scalar fields on a, he started with looking at causal sets, and it has repercussions even in the continuum, but you can use this to construct a full quantum field theory on a causal set. Interestingly, you can also use this space-time entanglement entropy due to Sorkin to calculate entanglement in causal sets. The same formula can be used in the continuum as well as in the discrete case. And one of the very interesting puzzles that came out of the discrete context, which we discussed a little bit yesterday, was how it seems that this non-locality, which I haven't had time to explain, but which is very much part of this discretization, can affect the entanglement entropy. In particular, if you don't do some very subtle truncations, the UV cutoff that is there in the discreteness is not sufficient to give you an area law. And this, I think, is another very big puzzle within the theory. We have dynamics, quantum dynamics, and for want of time, I'm just going to quickly, skip to, I'm just only going to talk about the continuum-inspired case. And here, you know, we have the space of causal sets, which is a space of n element partially ordered sets, and you want to construct the causal set path sum. So you're summing, taking the partition function and writing it as a path sum. And the action, the question is what action to use, and then to look at the sample space itself. And what does a typical causal set look like? And here's something that actually mathematicians had done before causal sets even came on the scene. People had looked at partially ordered sets and asked the question, what does the sample space look like? And interestingly enough, it's a very, you know, that there's an answer to this question, and that it's entropically dominated by objects that look like this, which are just three, if you like, three-time objects, which are very, very different from manifolds. And in fact, not only are those completely dominant, but they are, the subdominant ones are also highly non-manifold-like. So if we're supposed to get manifold likeness, and here's another thing about causal sets, is that we don't put dimension in from the start. Omega n contains all possible spacetimes of all possible dimensions, barring perhaps some, you know, some more complicated things. But the question is, how do we fish out manifold-like objects from here? So here is my next question, which is, unfortunately, I can't even read my screen because it's the screen sharing is in the way, but is there an order theoretic characterization of manifold-like causal sets? What action would make 4 plus D manifold-like causal sets dominate? 4 plus D, because maybe there's a Kaluza-Klein extra dimension. Again, I have just 3 minutes, so I just want to say that, like Renata said yesterday, old building blocks aren't enough. We need new principles, we need new symmetries, we need new dynamics. And for this, we have a way of thinking about causal sets. Sorry.
Sorry, Sumati, you have a bit longer than that. So you've got about five and a half minutes. So.
Oh, Very good. Okay, thank you.
Don't need to go totally crazy.
I was going totally crazy there. Okay. All right. So that's great. Okay. So here are some new principles in this true iconoclastic way of thinking about physics. We ask, you know, the state sum, the way of thinking about the part sum is to simply take what we know from the continuum and what we know from theories that we are familiar with, and to generalize it to include a discrete sub, you know, this discrete part sum. But you can think about causal sets and causal set dynamics in a wholly different way. And this is this beautiful sequential growth models due to Rideout and Sorkin, where you think of the simplest possible initial condition you can have for the universe, which was that there was one element. And everything then grows from that one element, but it grows in a way that is causal. So you don't, the new element that comes in, and here my new element is the blue element. So the first element is this red one at n equal to 1. N equal to 2, you have a blue element, and it can either come to the future of the existing one or be unrelated to it. It can't come to the past of it. So the growth is sequential, it's causal. And if you put in a few conditions, you know, on constraints on the nature of this, based on our notion of covariance, for example, which is that we don't want this coloring to matter. It's only this gray blob here. So you have three different ways of thinking about that gray blob, that gray corset. And if you colored it, there are three different colorings, but really they all should come with the same probability in a classical sequential growth. And an example of that is transitive percolation, which has been studied. So again, from the point of view of mathematicians, people have studied these models within classical models, sequential growth models. And there's a very nice review by Brightwell and Malvina Lucek on the kinds of things that people know about sort of typical causal sets that come from these growth models. And this is all within the classical context. The structure, however, the new structure we have to think about is really like the way we think of the random walk. So rather than think of Hilbert spaces as fundamental and quantizing a classical space-time, we think in terms of this measure space, which you have the sample space omega of all causal sets which are past finite. You construct this event algebra from it and you have a measure. Classically, of course, you have the probability measure, and from this you construct your entire theory. This is your theory, and the observables that you have to be independent of the labeling. Okay, they have to be events in this algebra. And therefore, because they have to be events in this algebra which are independent of labeling, you have to be able to take this measure, which you've started off like in the random walk, from an event algebra, finite event, finitely generated event algebra, to construct something that's the full sigma algebra and therefore something that is covariant. Okay, I've just mentioned a few things here. I don't have time to go over it.
You have less than 2 minutes now, Sumati.
Okay, great. So I will finish, hopefully. And this is my last but one slide, which is that really what one wants to do then is to take that measure theoretic structure of sequential growth and make it a quantum sequential growth. And for that, we retain everything in the classical case. We retain the same sample space, the same event algebra, but now we change the measure, because of course we want interference. We want to talk about non-trivial decoherence functionals, and that measure becomes something that we call a vector measure, that turns out to be a vector measure due to all of the things that are on the slide, which I don't have time to talk about. That vector measure, however, if it is to give us covariant dynamics, must extend. And unlike classical measures, which are probability measures, which are guaranteed to extend by the Kolmogorov Karatheodori-Hahn theorem, these are not. And so they're required to satisfy further convergence conditions. And so one And sorry, I mean, this is not very clear, but, you know, the one question that we're very interested in is, can we classify the covariant measures, quantum measures? We have some little corner, which Stav Zelel, who's at this meeting, has done some really nice work on this. We've got some very nice little results in a corner of the theory, which tells us, yes, you can construct this. So in a sense, it's possible to. The question is, can we categorize these in a clearer way? So here are my set of questions. And I've snuck in one more in there, which is that, what of gauge fields and spinners, which I think is again a very interesting question, whether it's coming from Kaluza-Klein or whether it's, you know, whether that's sufficient for us to think about this. So here, I'll end my talk here, hopefully within time.
Yes, that was perfect, Sumati. Thank you. Great. So yeah, so you've been so good with your time that we do have about 4 minutes for some questions. So please, I will scan the. Please put up your blue hand if you would like to ask a question. Or I think you can also just unmute yourself and introduce yourself also. Yes, please, Karen, go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. I have a very naive question since I don't work at all in causal set theory. So what does the Möbius function on the poset end up being in the physics?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
So you have the underlying structure is a locally finite poset. And so I was just, the first thing that I think of as a just discrete mathematician is the Möbius function of a locally finite poset. And so I wondered what physically that corresponds to.
That's a good question. I have no idea. And I don't know if it's not sparking anything in my head right now, but I'm wondering whether Faye, perhaps you have a comment on it. Do you know what the Möbius function?
No, I don't know what it is. Karen, can you explain what the Möbius function is?
It's the analog, like if you took the poset that was just subsets of a fixed set, then it turns into, then it's just taking signs. So you get standard inclusion, exclusion. And if you took the poset of natural numbers, you get the classic Möbius function of number theory. So it's a recursively defined function that lets you take inverses basically.
That's okay. So that's really interesting. I will definitely look into it. The only thing that I can sort of, I mean, this idea of inclusion is, you know, trying to extract topological structure from the causal set this way. But I don't know if this Möbius function requires your causal set, your poset to be a continuous poset. It doesn't.
No, it works okay. Fine for a finite. The only thing it needs is the local finiteness.
Oh, okay. That's very interesting. Thank you for the question. I will try to think about it and hopefully look it up by tomorrow and get back to you on it. I don't know if there's anyone else in causal set here who might have thought about this question, but I definitely haven't, yeah.
Hi, is that Lee?
Hi, beautiful talk and beautiful stuff, but just a general question. What role do conserved quantities play in causal set theory?
Sorry?
What role do conserved quantities play?
I think, so, I mean, so of course, if you're thinking in terms of Noether theorem and symmetries, mm-hmm. I would imagine that in the continuum limit, of course, we would expect the whole construction to be emergent. At a fundamental level, these order invariants, things that we call order invariants, things that are, order, that's the closest that I can think of is something that's an order invariant. But I don't, and so covariance, for example, importantly covariance, but not necessarily conserved quantities like mass or, you know, the equivalent of ADM mass, things like that don't go in explicitly into the theory. We of course strive towards, we want to construct a theory which is covariant. So you make sure, you want to make sure that there's label invariance and so on. But at the level that, so I think that, again, it's a good question. I don't think that we don't structure the theory according to a symmetry, for example, that you might, you know, have guessed at from the continuum. You want to go, you start off from scratch, literally, and then you want to see where the symmetries emerge. But having said that, we also don't know that much about the dynamics, we at the most fundamental level. So it is possible that they're sort of, I don't want to call them symmetry principles, but or conserved quantities, but it's possible that our dynamics is something that will preserve some kind of a, you know, if you look for the most general covariant dynamics, maybe putting in extra constraints that would do that for you. But this is very speculative, so I don't know, you know, I really don't have a better answer to it. Again, Faye, if you have something to say, that would be good.
Thanks.
No, that's how I would answer. I think that we'd expect them to be emergent. So, yeah. Good. So thank you very much for those questions, and we'll have a chance to discuss more in the social break.